Tell Me Everything with John Fugelsang on SiriusXM Progress 127.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. I am so pleased to welcome back to our program Gina Krause-Villemar. She's president and CEO of Upwardly Global. They're a national organization trying to support immigrants and refugees with international credentials to just restart their work careers in the U.S. She's an expert on refugee and immigrant economic inclusion. Ms. Krause-Villemar brings more than 15 years of experience in the for-profit and nonprofit sectors to her work at Upwardly Global. She's been interviewed on MSNBC, CNBC, and the New York Times, CNN. She's been published on CNN and in The Guardian as well. It's a great pleasure to welcome Gina Krause-Villemar back to SiriusXM. Hello.
Hi, John. So good to be back.
It's so good to have you. Thank you. We were expecting an unprecedented tsunami of migrants. It's been a lot. It hasn't been as huge as they predicted after the expiration of Title 42. But there was a surge in illegal border crossings reported earlier this week. It does seem, however, that it's bad. It's going to be bad for a while. Where do you land on where we're looking at? And is it just going to be a case of political fallout for the next few weeks? I mean, are the resources in place to help these asylum seekers who, again, I have to keep saying this, are not illegal immigrants? They are legal migrants and asylum seekers.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are about 150,000 people on the Mexican border right now. And there was concern that many of these individuals would be looking to come into the United States, both through the legal port of entry on the southern border and through other means. And the reality is that while the pandemic era Title 42 has expired as of this morning at midnight, it's not easy to be able to legally come into the United States through the southern border. So the Biden administration has really instituted a two-prong approach, which is, one, increase legal pathways for individuals to be able to come into the United States by not coming to the southern border. So we've got humanitarian parole where Cubans, Hondurans, Nicaraguans, Venezuelans are now eligible. We've got an increase in the number of refugees we plan on taking from Latin America from 20,000 to 40,000. The White House is going to be opening regional centers in Latin America, in Colombia, in Ecuador, in order to facilitate processing there. Mm-hmm. And the message that's sending, which is pretty loud and clear, is do not come to the southern border. Yeah. The second prong of this approach is if you come to the southern border, you will not likely get in if you're trying to seek asylum. And that means that there are things in place like denying people asylum simply because they traveled through another country and did not first seek asylum there.
Exactly. And you should have done this in Mexico before you got here.
And the reason why this is problematic is because in many of these countries, it's not easy to seek asylum. They have their own long processing time frame and they detain. So that means in effect, you're being put in jail if you're asking to seek asylum in some of these other countries. So that's the one thing is you will be denied at the southern border if you cannot demonstrate that. They're also requiring the use of the CBP1 app.
Yes.
The challenge with this is the only way to access asylum on the southern border. So it is really a system that is playing lottery with people's lives. You have to have a smartphone that is updated to include this app. You have to have internet access. You get on at 9 a.m. when they open the portal for people to request their application be submitted and get an appointment. And by 9:05 a.m., all those 70 slots are taken. And so you play that same game the next day and the next day. And I just told you that there are 150,000 people who want to access asylum by coming in from the southern border. So
this is for people who are crossing the border, who are expected to have smartphones and the ability to charge them. So every day they can use this app and be one of over 100,000 vying for 70 odd spots amidst widespread reports of the app not working. It seems that this is very deliberate. It seems that this is how the system is rigged, and that despite what people hear, despite all the jobs being dangled by Americans, the government, be it Democratic or Republican, is just systemically choosing to make this process as hard as possible to discourage more asylum seekers.
The strategy here is you have legal pathways. They're not going to be easy. There's not going to be many slots open, but you can access them, but not at the southern border. Do not come to the southern border is the message that's being sent. And this is problematic for two main reasons. One is it is an international right to be able to seek safety in the United States. It does not matter what port of entry you come in through, how many countries you have to travel through to get here. If you ask for that while you're in country or while you're trying to enter, none of that should matter. You have that right. And so that's one piece that's problematic. The second piece is our asylum system used to be incredibly robust. It has been so backlogged. We have so many tens of thousands of individuals where on average, if you seek asylum, it will take you up to 5 years to be able to know what the result of that claim is. And so we've got a backlog system that is under capacity, which the infrastructure has not been set up in. And we're not having that conversation. We're not saying, let's not put the onus on individuals to sort of say, you really shouldn't come through and seek asylum. Let's put the onus on setting up a system that would allow us to ethically and humanely process these individuals to access their international and U.S. rights.
When we as Americans are imprinted with the grooming of patriotism, of jingoism, of love for country, and they give us the facts about why we should love this country in school, one of the cornerstones of that education is what it's written in the Emma Lazarus poem on the Statue of Liberty. But despite what it says there, we don't really accept refugees. I mean, the UN reported last year, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that there are over 100 million refugees worldwide right now. Vox did a whole piece about how the number of refugees the US actually accepts has been on a very deep decline since 1980. In 1980, we let in 207,000 refugees into this country. Gina, last year, what was it, 25,000?
That's right. And there were big hopes that we would actually increase that to 100, which was what the Obama administration had set up as a standard. I would say the challenge here is immigration reform, looking at caps for how many refugees we allow into the country. That is something that has to be set by Congress. That is a legislative solution. And so what we're seeing is because the congressional side of the House is not doing their job, the executive branch is trying to compensate and make up for it. But what they're doing is they're basically saying, we know we can't handle this capacity, so we're going to deter people and make it actually really hard for people to get in and discourage them from even trying. And that is not the solution that we're looking for. So I think what we should be doing is saying, how do we rebuild the big ideas that this country was founded on and this country can absolutely achieve? And how are we focusing on that rather than saying we are an under-resourced system that can't manage when we know there are hundreds of welcoming cities? I mean, nonprofits and community-based organizations have been really leading the charge in response. Yes. If you're even looking at cities like El Paso, they are the ones that are housing people. They are the ones that are providing food. It's not necessarily the cities that are doing this. And so I think there's a real opportunity to say we are a welcoming country. We have welcoming cities. Our communities are overwhelmingly supportive of refuge and safety to be accessible in this country. And if we know that the legislative part of the House is not doing their job, then if the executive branch wants to try to do it, they need to do a much better job.
Well, let me ask you about that, because we just found out Kevin McCarthy has given Congressman Dan Crenshaw permission to lead a new task force focused on battling Mexican drug cartels. That's the big announcement from Congress about how they're taking things seriously. A big banner announcement about Mexican drug cartels, which tells me when they release that today, they have no interest whatsoever in the souls at our border. They have no interest whatsoever in finding a political solution. They have every interest in exploiting this suffering to try to smear and blame a political party they oppose without doing anything to solve it. We should expect more of the same, right?
We should expect more of the same. And I think at the end of the day, what we need to do is shift the narrative back to the fact that these are people, and that people don't make the light decision to uproot their families based on policy changes in another country. They do it because they feel like they have no choice and they're looking to seek safety for their families and children. We should remember that many of these individuals seeking refuge in the United States on the southern border are women and children and families. There are a high percentage of them. And so we can't forget that. And I think we need to reorient people to the fact that, you know, there's no cheating the system if you're seeking asylum in the United States. One, because it's international right, but two, because if you look at the active asylum cases in 2021, 63% of them were approved. So we know that the vast majority of those seeking asylum and registering with USCIS to do so are getting approved for their asylum cases. And we know that number increases when people have access to legal counsel, because legalese is not a natural language for any of us. And so if that's the case, this is not a system that's being cheated. These are people and individuals. And the other thing about Upwardly Global is that, you know, last year, 60% of the people that we served, the 6,000 of the people we served, were refugees, asylum seekers. And that is people with a college degree or higher.
Yes.
So
amazing.
This
amazing.
Is a mixed flow population. And when we think about Venezuelans, when we think about Cubans, when we think about even Afghans and Ukrainians that are also coming across the southern border, by the way, many of these are individuals are from middle income countries. And so you do have a mix of people who also have skills. And so we have to reimagine who we think of as refugees and we have or asylum seekers. And we also have to reimagine that these are individuals who are fleeing because they want to start a home in a safe place and they're willing to contribute. And I know we talk about that a lot.
But we also have to take into account that these are already adults who are educated. So we as Americans don't have to pay for their education or schooling. They can enter our workforce right away, start paying taxes, and start paying into our Social Security system. There's so many economic advantages, and this is how a country and its economy expands. Now, I had the great honor a few years back of doing stand-up for the U.S. troops stationed in Honduras. A lot of folks didn't know we have troops in Honduras, but we do because of the drug war. I was performing on an Air Force base that was being eaten by termites because all of the buildings had been built with wood during the Reagan administration and they hadn't planned on them lasting for 40 years. I saw firsthand that the reason why we have so many refugees from Honduras is they are fleeing violence from our drug war that is still going on. We just heard from Health and Human Services an announcement that an unaccompanied Honduran migrant teenager who was under the care of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, just died on Wednesday at a shelter in Safety Harbor, Florida. They're investigating, but we should expect to see more stories like this. We should expect to see more chaos like we're witnessing right now. So let me ask you the really tough question. What do you see happening over the course of this summer as Title 42 expires and as the people who don't want to do anything to solve the problem are willing to exploit it for cheap political points? What do you see the next few months looking like?
So first I will say there are many people that are standing in line at the border because they want to be able to come in legally. I think these individuals will continue to camp out and be standing in line for weeks and weeks and weeks for that opportunity. I think people will continue to come to the border because of sheer confusion and chaos around who is eligible to come in and who is not eligible to come in, because frankly, there are a lot of exceptions. And I think smugglers will take advantage of this situation. Mm-hmm. And so you will have illegal border crossings, but it's for people who will then apply. And we're seeing that already. People have crossed over illegally, and then they're all trying to get on the CBP app in order to get a slot for an asylum meeting. So we're still seeing that even if people are crossing illegally, they are still trying to do the right thing, and they're trying to apply for asylum. And so I think, communities will be stepping up. And I think cities that are brave will also contribute. But I think, you know, we saw a lot of busing happening from, you know, migrants or individuals that were newcomers coming into the country across the border that were being shipped to California and New York and DC and elsewhere. I think we will likely see that again. But I think the reality is it's going to be very hard for people to come through the border legally.
Yeah.
And so you're going to see a lot of frustration and desperation on the other side of the border. It's something we've already seen under Title 42, and it's just not going to get better. So in effect, Title 42 expired. The problem hasn't been solved. It's just been renamed as an asylum ban. And so we're going to just see more of the same.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I have to ask you about how your work with Upwardly Global is going with Afghan refugees. You have done such a great job of helping so many people who have been evacuated from Afghanistan get jobs in the U.S. And I also know from your Twitter that 18,000 of the Afghans who've come here since 2021 are women. As you point out, many of them have advanced degrees or previous careers as women leaders or human rights defenders. We don't hear a lot of coverage anymore in mainstream corporate news about how things are going for the Afghan refugees. How has your work been with relocating people, and how is the process going?
Yeah, so people are now settled in their cities that they've been, you know, shipped off to from the military bases. Most people have found their immediate survival job, that job that will put food on the table because they get so little upfront assistance. And now people are starting to look for, how do I improve my life? How do I get back into my my field? And so, you know, we've been able to work with about 4,500 Afghans to date, which is very exciting, but we know there's a lot more need. And we also know that if we actually invested in the workforce inclusion of Afghans, just Afghans, they could be contributing $646 million a year in consumer Amazing. Spending to the economy. And so I think that's a pretty compelling story. I think what we're worried about is two things, which is one, you know, many Afghans, their humanitarian parole expires in August. There has been an administrative change to extend that. But the reality is that's just pushing the can down the road, because then they have to either seek asylum. And spoiler alert, if this many people are seeking asylum in the country and the system is already backlogged and it already takes on average 5 years to get your asylum claim finalized, that means that there are fewer people that are going to be available to support Ukrainians and Afghans and other individuals on humanitarian parole or temporary protected status who are also looking to seek asylum. So we are just expanding exponentially this crisis in our asylum system that we have. And it's not going to just affect the people on the southern border. It's going to affect everybody and anybody, including That's Afghans, right. which puts more urgency on the fact that we need the Afghan Adjustment Act to be passed, which would fast track people's abilities to get residency and a green card. And that's a challenge again, because that would require Congress to act.
There you go.
And so the trend of what the executive office can do and what the House and the Senate can do continues to be a challenge. But we know that if we did this right, Afghans would be contributing an incredible amount, and the 4,500 that we've worked with already are. And we're really excited about all the employers that are stepping up.
And what does it say that we have Republicans who are terrified to help refugees because that might cost them the Christian vote? Gina Krause-Wilmar is president and CEO of Upwardly Global. It is an honor to have you back on our show. I so admire the work you do. Please come back soon, and thank you for your work. You inspire me deeply.
Thank you so much, John.